You're listening to the Right Turn Radio podcast.
Tonight is, an ongoing theme here because, you know, Abby, people say that addiction is a family disease. And they say that it's a family disease for many reasons because, you know, if someone is struggling with substance use and substance use disorder or other mental health issues, it's not just the individual that is struggling.
Right. The whole family gets taken in by the disease and ends up doing things that when they look from the outside, they're like, oh, my goodness, I can't believe it got to that. But tonight's theme, we're going to talk about opiate addiction in the family and how parents can identify addiction, learn to cope with it, and what the role is in their kids' recovery. And it's really interesting because we have two people who have been through it, and they're going to share their stories. And you know, we've had a show fairly recently, but that was more from the kids' point of view, and this is going to be interesting.
Right. We were talking about Not My Kid, right. The Brockton group.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. But tonight, we have our friend Jack from Learn to Cope, who is going to be joining us shortly. And we also have Melissa Weixner, the author of the book Heroine's Puppet.
And that's a book about her daughter Amy Caruso's struggle and the family struggle with a progression of drugs and ending up with heroin and then her daughter overdosed, and she's going to talk to us about that.
And Learn to Cope is a support group. It's a non-professional support group. It's for parents and family members who are dealing with loved ones addicted to, it started off with, with opiates, heroin, OxyContin, but we also want to say other drugs as well, including alcohol. And alcohol is drug. And for those listeners, so is marijuana.
Yes. and it's often the first one.
Right. And, a drug is a drug is a drug is a drug, as we say on this show. But let's talk just for a minute a little bit about opiates, because that's where Learn to Cope started. Let's kind of define what opiates are.
Well, I really thought it was important to talk about why are opiates different. Because everybody's, a drug is a drug is a drug is a drug. But opiates are very addictive very quickly, and they're much more deadly than any other medication. I mean, any other. And opiates consist of the painkillers, oxycodone, Percocet, Vicodin, all those. But it also consists of heroin, methadone, things like that. So I just wanted people to be aware of the reason today's show is focusing on heroin addiction is because it, in this state, kills so many more people than car accidents, than anything. It's the number one leading cause of accidental death in the state, and we're in trouble. If you go look at maps, New England and heroin are like best buddies.
And I think that the issue here is the accessibility of these medications that are in your medicine cabinet that are opiates, things that are painkillers, but also, other things like anxiety medications, which can be very dangerous as well, and very addictive. But it's as we've talked about on this show numerous times, that opiates and pain medications are prescribed and sometimes over-prescribed and available. The availability of pain medication is an ongoing issue.
So what we wanted to talk to Melissa and Jack about is, and we'll get to this after the break also, tell us your story. Tell us a little about what you noticed. And we'll start with you, Melissa. How did it start?
It started when we didn't recognize how depression can present so differently in a young person, because Amy was always so vivacious and friendly and outgoing, but she had anxiety, depression, and low self-esteem. And I've learned from reading her journals after she died that she did start with caffeine pills, which led to sleeping pills, and she started with marijuana. And she even wrote in her journals that she now got what we were saying about marijuana becoming a gateway drug, because she ended up progressing to cocaine. She was using cocaine as a sophomore in high school. She was using some liquor. She first started heroin at 17. When she was a junior in high school, I found a Vicodin in her purse, and I had no idea what a Vicodin really was. I mean, I was watching House at the time, and we were joking about his addiction popping the Vicodins. I had no idea how serious that really was.
And Jack, similar story, I'm sure?
Similar story, a couple of years of pot use, and then Perc 30s, and then very quickly into heroin. So it was a very steep climb.
Mm-hmm. But you're proud to say that your daughter...
Yes. She's 19. She's 7 months clean. It's a whole different daughter now, mm-hmm. right? Rebecca is now working. She's doing things. She's actively engaged in life. And so now when I look back, I see how unengaged she was in life and what a difference.
There's this beautiful quote in the book that says, it's from Melissa's book, which is Heroine's Puppet, describing giving out her Christmas card, and everybody would say, "Oh my God, your family is beautiful." And she would say to herself, "Can you tell which one's the heroin addict?" And I wanted to kind of talk about how were you able to tell? What were the first signs that you saw when you look back about that your daughter was an addict or in trouble?
We didn't actually know she was a heroin addict until about 6 weeks before she died, mm-hmm. when she came with her drug counselor and me to tell me that she was sick and she needed to go to treatment. But we had signals throughout high school. I'll never forget the day she showed up for cross-country practice high on marijuana, and I was teaching at the same school.
Oh.
And so we had a meeting with the principal at 4:30, and then at 7 o'clock I'm in front of parents, many of whom had daughters on the cross-country team, with my daughter having been high for practice. And then there were, you know, other things, finding a positive tox screen for cocaine at one point, erratic behavior, but we never thought that it could be addiction.
Okay. And Jack, what kinds of things did you see?
We didn't really have a clue. It caught us by surprise, and we only caught at the end, we only realized the extent of the problem when we found that she wasn't telling us the truth about what she did over the weekend. And then we confronted her, and then, you know, we started down a path we never saw coming.
Well, let me ask. I mean, did you know that she was using other substances before she picked up the opiates?
We did, and she was going to...
And so at what age did that start? She's now 19.
A little before she was 18.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so...
And so you knew that there was some marijuana use.
Yep, and we did, and she had gone to AA for a while, and she started to back out of that. And then she started to disengage, sleep a lot, not show up at work, started to sort of be unsocial, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know what it really was, and we were shocked once we got her into a detox as to the fact it was heroin.
Mm-hmm. See, Abby, I think that this is important information because people need to know about the progression of addiction, that it doesn't just start with opiates. Sometimes it starts in their adolescence with marijuana.
Or alcohol. Well, it reminds me of that quote 2 weeks ago that if you think something's up, it probably is. And that was one of the guys who got, you know, was in our program at some point talking about his experience with it.
And that was a very important piece, message to the parents. If you think that something is up, there's probably something going on. Melissa, you learned that your daughter was using substances and far into this progression. And so what did treatment look like at that point? Did you propose treatment at that point?
Well, when we learned she was a heroin addict, she knew she wanted to go to detox and rehab. But even throughout high school, we knew we had to get her counseling. And she had counselors, but she was able to manipulate them and not give them the whole story. And quite frankly, some of the counselors she was with were not specialists in dealing with this disease. So much like if you had cancer, you would go to an oncologist. If you have budding addiction, you should be seeing a doctor who treats addiction, not a generalist.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you said in the book that manipulation is another word for survival.
Yeah.
And we had talked about this a little before, Jack. So tell me about the manipulation.
For our daughter, at least, the manipulation was constant, telling us what we wanted to hear. So the more we heard what we wanted to hear, the safer we thought she was, the easier it became for her to use the drug. So, you know, it's as if heroin is standing between your child and you. And the heroin just wants to feed itself and is happiest if the addict is sitting on the floor doing heroin. So whatever makes that comfortable is what the addict will tell you. And as a parent, it's counterintuitive to think that your child is lying to you, because it's your child.
Right, and what you struggled with, how much to believe and how much not to believe, and how much tracking to do and how much spying to do, and how did you balance that out, Melissa?
Boy, I felt I was learning at every single juncture, and what I was really missing at that point was some kind of a parental support group like a Learn to Cope that I think would have helped keep me in much better shape going through those years.
Right. I mean, it makes you insane.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because here's somebody saying something, and it sounds so reasonable, and it's, you know, and you're like, and then they walk out of the room, and you've agreed to something, and you're like, how did that happen?
Well, even things like my daughter would say, because I'm a girl, I'm not going to go buy any drugs on the street because I'd feel too unsafe. And so that, you know, in a way makes you feel comforted and also gives her sort of the cover to go do that.
Absolutely, sure. You know, and Abby, this kind of goes back to our point that parents are the ones who are struggling just as much as the person with substance use, I guess we'll say the problem of substance use. So it's really important that, you know, the parents hear this, that now you're at a place, at a juncture where your child begins to try to get honest with you, but not fully honest with you. That, as you said, they're protecting or defending their right to use substances, you know. Must have felt pretty awful to have lost your daughter at that point.
Well, you know, we confronted her. She refused to take
the drug
test. And when
I said lost, I meant that relationship.
Yeah. And it was a loss, right? And we went to Learn to Cope. And the thing that we were able to see is that we realized that, you know, we weren't alone. We realized that everybody has a story.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to get support because we had to make a hard decision, which is you can't live here anymore. And as a dad of a daughter, it's a very tough place to be. And yet when we went to Learn to Cope, we heard consistent advice that that's the right decision to make because you can't make it easy to do heroin. You can't make it easy to do drugs. You have to have a little discomfort and accountability if they're going to start to get better.
Must have felt a little kind of counterintuitive to say, you know, I love you, but we can't tolerate this.
Right. I love you. I want to keep you safe, and you have to leave our house.
Ah,
it's an impossible sentence that everybody who's in this dilemma eventually gets to. And Melissa, you said you were told by a doctor that he thought that Amy was in a prisoner's dilemma. What does that mean to you?
You know, I think she was equally troubled about how, you know, how to deal with us. And as our friend from Learn to Cope was saying, she would do good things. And the more good things she did, the more we wanted to believe her. You know, academically, she was taking AP courses. She transferred into Boston College. She was talking about going on for a master's in nursing. So a lot of times, I think when your kid is saying these types of things, particularly around education, you think, oh, well, they can't be getting into that much trouble. But in fact, what I'm finding the more I talk with parents is that oftentimes it is your really bright kids who can get into trouble really quickly because they think they can outsmart the addiction with their smarts. And it's a disease. You can't outsmart cancer. You can't outsmart addiction.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Melissa, I want to follow up with that with a question because you talked in your book, you know, on page 61 in your book, you know, you talked about an avoidable choice that was a burden on the system when you were talking about your child at City Pediatrics, mm-hmm. and that you felt, you know, you felt a little guilty about
yeah.
this. And why would addiction be considered, you know, less than any other medical issue at this point?
Again, I think it's a stigma that we grow up with, thinking that, you know, an addict is doing this solely by choice. And yes, they may make a few bad decisions initially, but the disease hijacks the brain and they no longer have the control that we may think they do.
Yeah, and the other thing about the manipulation that I think is that when your daughters were telling you the truth, they also partly wanted to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to be that person. They don't want to be the person
right.
who's sitting around disappointing their parents and themselves over and over and over. And that's kind of just the how heroin and opiates just runs people's lives. Nobody wants it to happen. We're here with two guests, Jack from Learn to Cope and Melissa Weixner, who wrote a book using her daughter's journal and, you know, her own journal to kind of put together the sequences of events that eventually led to her daughter's death. You have a beautiful segment that you were going to read for us from your daughter's diary.
Yep, she's about halfway through rehab and says, "Drugs have been my plan, my sole coping skills for 6 years now. At the beginning of this last run, I still had my head on straight. I had the aftertaste of sobriety reminding me that I didn't need to live the way I was. I truly thought I would only use for a short period, then get back to my normal life. But as the use increased, my control quickly diminished, and once into the chronic stage of my addiction, I lost sight of what was most important to me. I stand today as heroin's puppet, feeling as if every fiber in my being is dull, responding only to the stimulation of potential drug use. The disease has a stronghold, a white-knuckled fist, fingernails ripping through my skin, prying deeper and deeper into my body. I wonder what I can possibly do to break free from its grasp and remember the life I used to love and show up for."
Wow, that is such a beautiful way of putting it.
It's powerful.
Thank you for sharing that. See, I mean, I think that just shows the ambivalence. Yeah. I think everybody comes into this, you know, comes into my office, and I work with a lot of families saying, "What did I do?" And basically, you didn't do anything. You raised an eloquent daughter who fell for this thing.
Yeah. Well, she told us there's nothing we really could have done differently.
Right. And, you know, it's so, and everybody, I think the scary thing is when there are books out there like this, and when Learn to Cope, when you go to those meetings, it's everybody, you know, it's anybody. It's not like, you know, it was always easy when we were, oh, it's them, those people, but it's not really, it's really us.
And maybe Jack, you can talk a little bit about how you have handled this anger or, you know,
these feelings
about dealing with this. Your 19-year-old daughter who struggled with substance use.
Well, the amazing thing I thought was when I went to Learn to Cope, someone said, you know, you didn't raise your daughter to be a heroin addict. And so one of the things to realize is you can't make your daughter or son a CEO. You can't make them a heroin addict. It's really a question of how do you handle what's been presented to you. You can't control the disease, but you can control your reaction to it. And so how do you become consistent? How do you understand that you may have to act differently than you would with another child who didn't have an addiction problem? And you got to be a little counterintuitive, you know, as you said. You have to make sure that, you know, you treat her in a way that helps her almost hit the bottom as soon as she can so that she can start the road to recovery. Mm-hmm. And when you run into enabling and you run into making it easy for somebody to do heroin, you really do them a disservice. But as a parent, you want to keep your child safe. You want to keep your child protected. And yet, that's absolutely the wrong thing to do if your child's an addict.
But that must have been a process, getting to that place. Because as we hear from parents all the time, Abby, that they go through this cycle of arguing with their kids and having these fight with the kids, which only makes the parents more, and I want to say, sick, because they feel like they're going through the same kind of cycle. So it must have been a process for you.
It was a process. What made me the most angry was that I found heroin in my house, and that absolutely set me off, that my house would be invaded in a way by the addiction. It changed it for me, and I had a lot of anger about that issue. And it is a process. You have to go through the anger. You have to go through your stages of change, if you will, so that you get out at the point where you're trying to do the most good that you can.
Well, and I think the other piece of advice we got from a bunch of guys a few weeks ago was it's not the friends they hang out with. That's who they're choosing to hang out with. And I thought that was just, oh, yeah. So you can say, well, it's so-and-so and so-and-so, but it's not. You know, it's a wonderful, horrible cocktail of genetics, happenstance, and, you know, who knows what else that makes people more likely to pick up drugs.
But, you know, we've talked about on this radio show many times, Abby, some of the warning signs when our children start to change their friends, they start to say goodbye to the people that they used to hang out with, and they start to have friends that you may not know anymore. You know, you may not have ever been introduced to these people. Should we go to the phones? Let's go to the phones. Abby, who's on the phone?
Suzanne.
Suzanne, you're live on the air with Abby and Woody.
Hi, Abby.
Hi.
I have a son who's around 19 years old. He's a good, kind-hearted kid, and I find him every now and then smoking pot with his friends. Not that I've actually seen him, but you can smell it and you can tell. And I have confronted him, and every now and then he'll say yes. Every now and then he'll say no. I don't do this anymore.
And you've told him you can't tolerate this, right?
Yes, I have. I have.
Well, you know, it's difficult unless we really have a plan in place.
All right. That's one of those things. So when you confront him, do you have a plan? Like if he is smoking pot, then he can't go out with those friends? Or if he is smoking pot, does he have to do extra chores? Or if he is smoking pot, he has to go to counseling? That's one of those crucial things. So when you confront someone, you should have a plan. There are some things that parents are able to control, and we call them the 7 C's, and I always remember 6, but you can control his cell phone, any access he has to cash, any access he has to
credit cards,
computers, cell phones, whether or not you're going to pay for classes, all those things. If being sober is important to you, if him being sober is important to you, those are the things you can manipulate. But the major thing I think you could use is get some help with it. You know, talk to someone who understands it, school counselor, somebody.
Do you think that your son is open to receiving a little help?
I've actually discussed it with him, and he said to me, "Well, Mom, I'm not addicted, and, you know, I have things under control, and I just don't want to get to that stage with him that, you know, God forbid, somewhere down the line, there might be an issue."
And I think that Abby's point about the 7 C's, you do have these 7 C's, there are consequences that you can show your son, and you can get his attention, you know, by limiting his curfew, limiting his cell phone, his credit cards, his computer. But at the same time, maybe it's time to say, I'd like you to sit down with an addiction counselor and agree to 3 sessions.
Or, you know, just a short term, you know, to discuss with somebody who's not mom, just, you know, whether or not he is in trouble, and whether, you know, how he would know if he was in trouble, and what you should do if he is.
See, and I agree with you, Abby, that it's short term, right? Because you're just saying, I want you to meet with this person for 3 visits. It's short term. Okay, you're telling me that you don't have a drug problem. Well, then we're not going to throw you into a residential program right now.
For 6 months.
But we do want to do something on short term so that you learn a little more.
And if you have any questions, call a professional. Ask them for help. Thank you for
your call. Do you have any professionals in mind?
Actually, there are a lot of them around, and it depends where you live. There's a social work therapy referral service. They often have people who are doing it. Or does NADAC have a list?
They're in NADAC?
Where do you live? What town do you live in?
In Lowell.
In Lowell. I would call Lowell House and ask them, because they're a good program, and if they're not a good fit for you, they would know good ones around.
And if you have trouble and run into problems, you can give us a call. We're in the office 9 to 5 every day.
Well, you know what? I think there should be more programs in the schools.
Yeah.
Good point. Thank you so much. Really good point.
There should be more programs everywhere. There should be treatment on demand. There should be, yes, I agree. So one of the things that I've seen both of you kind of talk about is the dance that ended up happening. So you find out it's a disaster. You're feeling awful. What did you implement, Jack?
Well, we told her she had to take a drug test. She refused. Then she admitted that she had taken some perks a couple of days before. We told her she had an option. She had to go to detox, but she couldn't live there anymore. Home was not an option. And so she went to detox. We gave her car to the Veterans Association, to some vets, and we got rid of her cell phone. And we essentially said, you know, we're here to support you. We're here to love you, but we're not here to be conned, and you need to do the hard work to get better.
And Melissa, what did you do when you found out she was really using heroin at that point?
Well, at that point, she had already met with the drug counselor, and they were working on getting her into a program.
And she was in a program when she died?
Yes. She was able to sneak drugs into the facility.
Ugh.
And they did not have Narcan, the drug that will reverse an overdose.
Right. There is and we're going to actually do a show on that soon. Mm-hmm. There's a medication that we recommend that anybody who's has kids who are using to get trained in Narcan. It's just a little, injection of kind of a spritz up people's noses, and it puts them into instant withdrawal.
You know, an interesting thing, because Learn to Cope does Narcan training.
Yes.
And as well as they provide parents with drug tests as
yes.
well.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. Have you taken the drug, the Narcan?
I'm actually certified to train Narcan.
Is that right? Is that right? Oh, so you're one of the trainers.
We have it at work.
This is terrific information for parents, guys. You know, people need to hear this. And I know, Jack, it sounded a little tough for you to say, I love you too much, but you can't stay here. Yeah.
And her reaction, you know, we sent her to a house in New Hampshire for a month to get better, and she was reluctant, and she kept sort of deviating and not wanting to participate. And I said, it's up to you. It's your recovery.
Melissa, you have a great quote from, you know, your book about that Amy wrote about how to beat it.
Yeah. She said, in order to beat this disease, I need to do one crucial thing, outsmart myself. And she was somebody who never really had to work hard at anything. I think she believed that she would be able to beat this with her intellect, and she did not realize that intellect doesn't beat this.
It doesn't have a chance.
Yeah.
She was writing this journal while she was in treatment?
Yes.
And did they gave you this journal?
We found it among her
you
belongings.
You found it among her belongings.
Yeah. Yeah.
It seems like a wonderful gift. You know, all the basic things they say to parents, which is, you know, you didn't cause it, you can't control it, you can't cure it. It was a whole book of her saying, Mom and Dad, you did great. I just lost.
And so this is your opportunity to take her book, her diary, or mm-hmm. Her journal.
Yes.
And it's a gift to you.
Very much. I had no idea that she was in so much torment when she was in treatment, and I think some of her counselors didn't either. They were very optimistic about how she was doing, and we never thought she was going to die.
Mm-hmm. No.
Well, and it's just an amazing piece that you get to carry that message and continue to carry that message. Jack, I want to ask you, I want to talk about solution a little bit. So what is working? Give us some hope here for your daughter. What seems to be working here?
For my daughter, she found the 12-step program to be, you know, the program that's used in AA. It's also used for addiction issues. She was immersed in that, and that helped her. She couldn't do it over a long period of time. She needed to do it intensively. She did it intensively, and she lives that every day. And so that's part of her recovery. So I've found that, you know, she's really reacted well to that, and it has worked for her. And as long as she's living it, she's able to do a recovery. And it doesn't allow for excuses, right? You don't get to say, geez, I'm not going to go to any meetings, right? If you're not going to meetings, you're not working on your recovery.
And I don't mean to put you on the spot, but does 12-step recovery working in your lives today?
I started attending a Naranon meeting a few weeks before Amy died. And now it's over 3 years since she died, and I still go almost every week.
Now, some people might not know what meeting that is, a Naranon meeting.
Yeah, it's Naranon is to Narcotics Anonymous, as Al-Anon is to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's basically a 12-step support group for the loved ones of people with a narcotics or other drug addiction.
And Jack?
Learn to Cope actually has a 12-step program the parents can go to, which is their way of connecting to the recovery of their children.
So the two of you have learned some really painful lessons. What are important things for parents to know? Melissa?
I think it's important to realize that we are living in a very toxic culture for today's young people, and that today's epidemic is just devastating the generation and devastating families, devastating communities, and I believe the nation's economy and national security. And I think it can happen. I know now that it can happen anywhere. When Amy was getting sick, I thought, gee, it couldn't happen here in my suburb, in this school, but it can happen anywhere. And the other thing to realize is that just like everyone who's struggling is an individual, they have to find the treatment program that's the right fit. Not everyone, not every therapist out there, not every program out there is the right fit, and you just have to keep fighting for your kid to find the treatment program that works.
Nicely said. And Jack?
I think I discovered that it's easy to give pills to people who have anxiety, and if you're an addict, you use anxiety as a way of getting medication. I also learned that you can't control the disease, but you can control your reaction to it. And so going to a group like Learn to Cope is really helpful as a parent. And my advice, I guess, is from a dad's perspective, go with your partner, right? Because I see so many moms at this, and it seems to fall on the moms to be accountable and responsible for that. But I encourage the dads to go because you got a partner on this. It's too hard to go through it by yourself.
Well, you said that about 90% of the people who attend Learn to Cope are possibly women. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes.
And so you're saying, reaching out to people, listeners here, and saying, well, the fathers get involved as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you're not doing it together, one of you may be sending a different message. And oftentimes you hear stories of one parent sort of holding the line and the other enabling, right? So you're sending mixed messages, and the addict is going to use that to divide you and to conquer and to continue to do the drugs.
It's hard enough to be a parent, right?
And the one thing I really want people to take away from this is that it's everywhere. It's like you're not immune, you know, and it's easy to say, well, this person that did heroin because of that. But it's just everywhere. They did heroin because they found heroin, and it was there, and it's there.
And Abby, Melissa used the word epidemic, and that this is something that Senator Tolman was talking about the other night.
Right. The major problems with this is it's very, you know, New England has a huge problem with it. But it's also, I wonder what's going to happen, because it's affecting this age group from like 16 to 25 is where the biggest group. And are they going to be carrying this epidemic with them as they get older? And that just really worries me.
We want to learn a little bit more about how to find Melissa's book.
Heroinspuppet.com. It is available in hard copy, audiobook, and ebook.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And can people find you on that website as well?
They can.
Okay. And Jack, tell us about how to get in touch with Learn to Cope.
Well, it's learn2cope.com.
Right.
Or .org.
And you can look it up, and they have wonderful websites.
The website is fabulous for Learn to Cope. You get consistent advice. You can go on at any time. Lots of people are on it. It's a great resource for parents. They can find meetings. They can get advice for issues that pop up. They can get other parents who come on and say, this is what I did. So they don't feel so alone, and the advice I've found is very consistent.
Mm-hmm. And they can also learn about trainings.
Yes, they can. They can learn about training. They can learn about meetings, as you said. There's lots of resources available.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Learn to Cope has 4,000 registered members on their website and chapters in Massachusetts. The newest just started in Cambridge on Mondays and Tewksbury's on Tuesdays. People can go to the website and click on meetings and see what's going on.
We'd like to thank you.
Thank you for sharing, and thank you for sharing your daughters with us. And I feel like we got to know them a little, and I'm sorry we never got to meet Amy. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Right Turn Radio podcast. Please check us out on Facebook and at www.right-turn.org.